Hello and welcome into the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe. This is episode 8. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the show. Happy to be joined alongside my co-host, Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media, and Michael Freer. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Oh, couldn't be better, Ross. Could not be better.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward. This is one of the ones I'm really looking forward to. This is going to be a really fun episode.
I'm definitely looking forward to it myself. And World B, let's get started with you on the opening tip here tonight. Switch things up. What do you got for us?
Well, my opening opening thought is about Kemba Walker recently just got waived by the Mavericks. One of my all-time favorite players that I've ever seen play, or I've enjoyed watching play. You know, I've been following the NBA since the 70s, and I think if I had to list five players that I enjoyed watching, he'd be in my favorite, you know, list there. He's that cool. He's going to have his number retired the minute he hangs it up for good in Charlotte, probably about like 10 minutes after he announces. You know, he didn't get a whole lot of time with the Mavs, just like eight points a game, something like that. But he's the greatest player in the history of the Hornets franchise. He was the most exciting player. After they returned, they really didn't have anything in Charlotte to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, a buzz about with them. And he came along. He really worked himself into a all-star player. He was not a great player at the beginning, not a good shooter. He worked himself into being a really good shooter and leader. He was beloved not just on the court but off the court in that city. And it's I hope he's not done, but I fear he may be. So, you know, kudos to Kemba Walker if this is it on a great career.
Yeah, and I've had a couple of my friends reach out asking me whether or not they think he's going to get another job in the league. I think with the 30-point performance, he may get another 10-day opportunity before this season's over. But not very sure, as everyone's well aware, he is nearing the end of his career. But that is tough news out of Dallas for Kemba, and hopefully he'll get one more last chance somewhere else. As for me, I'm also going to focus on some point guards for my opening tip, and that was last night's matchup, LaMelo Ball versus Tyrese Haliburton in Indiana. And Halliburton's Pacers won that battle at home, 116-111. LaMelo Ball did not have quite the night we were expecting. He fouled out in just 24 minutes of play, scoring 13 points on 5 of 12 shooting, and had 8 assists and 1 turnover. As for Haliburton, he led his team to victory with 16 points on just 4 of 10 shooting, 13 assists. He did have 3 steals and 1 turnover. So, unfortunately, as much as I hyped it up on my Scout Sense Instagram page, want to thank everybody for voting on that. 90% of the people said they'd take Tyrese Haliburton over LaMelo Ball. That seems to be correct as the numbers stand today and how their careers have fared thus far. But still two very young, exciting point guards, and hopefully we'll have some more exciting matchups from those two later to come in the future. Bruce, what do you got for us tonight?
Well, there's a panic test going on all over Brooklyn as Kevin Durant is out with an MCL sprain of his right knee. Looks like he's probably going to be out for about a month. They're going to reevaluate him in a couple of weeks. This is not the first time he's missed significant time with an injury like that. He missed time last year with an MCL on his other leg, and the team went 5-17 without him. He also missed time in 2017. With an MCL injury and a bone bruise, although that team managed to somehow or another win the championship in Golden State. I don't know how they ever did it. But I guess the big question in Brooklyn now is, there's a few of them, and we'll examine a few, but the first big one I would say is, can Kyrie Irving carry this team in KD's absence? You know, Kyrie, in some of his previous stops, always sort of made noise like he wanted to be, you know, the guy. Well, he's now going to have a good solid month where he's going to be the guy. So what do you guys think? Is he capable of keeping that thing humming, or are they looking at some real problems over the next month or so?
Will be?
I think they're looking at some problems. I think Kyrie, from an offensive standpoint, is more than capable of doing it. Do I really want to hang my hat on Kyrie Irving leading my team at this point? I don't. They do have talent. They do have other pieces that they can keep afloat. I think Ben Simmons is going to have to be more of an offensive factor in this whole thing. But they do have guys who can do it. They got guys who can shoot, which is positive, especially this day and age. So I think they're capable of keeping the thing from growing in, you know, really in the tank. But it's going to be difficult. They average about 9 more points or 9 fewer points when KD is off the court than when he's on per 100 possessions. So that's a big drop-off. It's not the biggest, but it is a big drop-off. And he's been playing at such an MVP-type caliber type of play this level this year. It's going to be tough, but they do have talent, and they have enough to do it. But if you're asking me if I think they're going to do it with Kyrie leading the way, I'd say no.
Yeah, good point there. I know one thing, it's not going to be pretty in Brooklyn, especially these next couple of games, trying to figure out the rotations, the offense, without such a big piece in KD. But I do have an answer for you guys. Go ahead and stop me if you've heard this before. TJ Warren is going to have to be a guy that steps up. I've talked about him all year long for our listeners. He's a guy that's going to have to fill in, put up some points on the offensive end. Royce O'Neal's another guy who should be getting to benefit, getting some more shots on the perimeter for that Brooklyn Nets team. And Seth Curry, another name that's kind of, fallen out of the wayside with Kyrie back full time. He's going to have to step up, have some high scoring games, 15 to 20 a night. They're going to have to get him involved. And obviously, they're hoping for the best with Joe Harris, too. Joe Harris is another guy that can maybe come back and fill a role on the wing while KD is out. Bruce, I'm concerned. It's not going to be a quick fix. It's probably going to take a couple of games to figure out their new flow offensively. And in the meantime, I guess we'll watch the Kyrie show. He'll probably put up great numbers, as you guys both alluded to. But I don't know about, if they're going to say, top 5 team in the East right now.
I will say this. I will say one of the things they have going for them is they really have improved their defense since the start of the year. That could keep them – if they can really turn up the defense, they could really – that could really balance things out, and they could really change – they may have to change their philosophy, turn their direction more towards that. But they can do it with Ben Simmons there. Kyrie's not a bad defender when he wants to be. I think they have a chance on the defensive end to stay in this.
One of the ways they did improve their defense, well, two of the ways, really. Number one, you mentioned Ben Simmons. He's been playing great defense ever since he's gotten back in there. But Durant was playing incredible defense this year. Some of the best defense I've ever seen the guy play at the age of 34. So, yes, their defense is going to be not as good, perhaps, without him, although maybe good enough. But one guy I was looking at on their roster that I think really – he's mostly been in bubble wrap for a good part of this season, but I think he's still a very capable guy for a period of time – is Markieff Morris. I mean, Markieff Morris and his brother have always been guys that could get numbers, that could play minutes, that usually stayed pretty healthy or pretty durable, tough guys that could really, play with an edge. So I think, he's only averaging 4 points and playing about 11 minutes. So I would say while Durant's out, I mean, that 11 minutes is probably going to double, I would say. He's probably looking at, 20 to 25 minutes. And if he plays 20 to 25 minutes, gets you 8-9 points, a few rebounds, plays some good defense, provides a little bit of physical toughness. I look for him to be a guy that might really be useful for Jacques Vaughn, who, by the way, has done an amazing job with that team this year.
Has.
And we're now going to find out if he really has the buttons to push or if it was always, hey, I got my 2 studs.
Yeah, great point there, Bruce. Another guy that I'm keeping an eye on along with Morris would be Yuta Watanabe. He currently leads the NBA in 3-point field goal percentage at 52.7%. He does have some length. He's a longer forward. So he can kind of fill in that long, lengthy forward position that KD does, at least defensively. And he can, you know, stroke it from the outside. So I'd keep an eye on those two names. Bruce's Markieff Morris and Watanabe would be my pick as well.
Wouldn't it be great if they just started to chuck it all every night now? If it took about 50 threes a night, you know, if 50 to 60% of their shots were all threes, they have all the players to do it. You know, they want to really go all right, let's try to, and just throw up 50 threes a night. That'd be great.
Go ahead, Don Ross.
I'd say it'd only be great if we were guaranteed to get one Ben Simmons three a night. Go ahead, Bruce.
How about one Ben Simmons attempt this year? you know, I love Watanabe's nickname, Yuta the Shooter. That's a great nickname. Yes, he's the dude, you know, he likes to let it fly. Well, look, Brooklyn's next game is going to be on Thursday against Boston. It's at home, so Kyrie won't have to listen to the drunk Celtics fans that I love and revere so much, shouting God knows what at him. But we'll see if, you know, with all the shots that he's now going to have to take and all the extra ball handling he's going to have to do, we'll see if he's, you know, he's now 30 years old, maybe even a bit north of 30. Let's see if, you know, look, let's see what he's got. I mean, this is his chance to really show that he can still be the man for an extended period of time. And, you know, they're relying on him.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that, Bruce, is Kyrie Irving, I would arguably say, is still kind of battling for a position in the All-Star game, trying to make his argument. This should certainly be the true test of whether or not he's worthy of an All-Star game appearance this year. You know, of course, missing games to start the season. This is the true test. If you want to make that team, here's your chance. So
this is a contract year still for him.
Yeah.
So he this is his chance to really step up and work towards a major payday, which is, you know, what the offseason was about. And so he's got a lot to prove for the team, but he's got a lot to prove in getting that big contract after this season from somebody.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of those teams that Kyrie Irving has been linked to is the Los Angeles Lakers. And that will take us right into our first quarter here. The Lakers now 19-21 on the season, and their crosstown foes in the LA Clippers at 500 now, 21-21. These two teams are going in opposite directions. What have you guys noticed out west between the City of Angels with the Lakers and the Clippers?
Come on, Mike.
Lakers offense is finally in track. I mean, during this win streak, they're averaging about 100, almost 120 points per 100 possessions. Their effective field goal percentage is almost 60. LeBron is playing out of his mind now. He's played in 4 out of 5 games in this win streak, 38 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, 8 assists. I mean, he's just having a ridiculous, you know, he's 20 years in the league. He's almost averaging 30 points a game. We've talked about him before. You know, Bruce has mentioned him. It's ridiculous. But, I mean, since they started 2-10, they're 17-11 since November 13th. That's the 8th best record in the league. So, you know, we were dusting them off. We, you know, our first show or two, we kind of dismissed them for reason because they weren't, you know, they didn't show us anything. But they're really, they're getting it together, doing it without AD, by the way, for the most part. And I think this is going to last. I think they're rolling here, and I think it's going to last.
Nobody can tell me, after what we've seen from LeBron James in the past month plus, let's say the last 5 weeks, since December 2nd, let's say, all right, I've been saying for more than 10 years that LeBron James, when he hangs up his sneakers for the last time, will go down in history as the greatest individual basketball player ever. And the Michael Jordan crowd relentlessly, you know, heckles me over this. There's no way anyone could possibly be better than Michael Jordan. I got news for you. In year 20, LeBron James is playing like prime LeBron James, all right? He's the fastest guy on the court. He's the most explosive guy on the court. His basketball IQ has layer upon layer upon layer of knowledge after all these years. He is single-handedly carrying a team that basically isn't that good and keeping them above water. And then, you know, sooner than expected, Anthony Davis is going to be back. But he's been, since December 2nd, He's averaging almost 32 points, almost 8 rebounds, more than 7 assists, playing 36 and a half minutes a game in year 20, okay? I'm sorry. We have never seen anything like this, and I promise you I will never back down from the fact that LeBron James is the greatest individual player we have ever seen in this game. And that's really, you know, there's more to say about this team, but I couldn't feel more strongly than I do about his greatness.
Yeah, and I think what's great about this team right now is they're starting to get solid contributions from guys they signed this offseason and are heavily relying upon, obviously, with just their lack of depth on the team. Dennis Schroeder is starting to play exceptionally well for this ball club. He's put up 20-plus points in, I think, all four of his last games for this team during their streak. They got Thomas Bryant playing at a high level. He had been out the year before battling injury. He brings a ton of energy. I know he's been mentioned by me on this pod earlier as someone to keep an eye out for. And Russell Westbrook, as much crap as we gave him at the beginning of the year, he's found a really nice niche off that bench for that team. And just the other night, he came an assist shy of a triple-double, kind of back to his old ways and really playing within the Lakers system now and not just out of control, trying to force things. And this team is starting to gel, and it's gelling at the right time. LeBron, Bruce, as you said, is playing the best ball of the season right now. And Anthony Davis, it's reported that he has been doing individual workouts. They're continuing to monitor it, but all signs and all reports back from the coaching staff is that he's continuing to make steady progress and should be back soon. So definitely the Lakers are on the upswing, and at this point, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
Just a half a game behind the Suns and a game behind the Warriors. I mean, yeah. It's just incredible where they're at from where they started.
They're in 11th. They're in the number 11 spot right now, okay? But they're one game out of the sixth spot because that's where the Clippers are. Those teams are so bunched up in the West near the bottom of the, you know, over, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, right in there. It's really it's super tight.
There's only five teams in the West, by the way, that have a winning record.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a mess right now.
Wow. Well, you know, so LeBron, as we said, he's 423 points away from becoming the all-time scoring leader. I had predicted February 11th on a recent show. I'm still going to stick with that, although the way he's been going, it might be sooner, okay, because he's just been, like, crushing it lately. But I love what Thomas Bryant has done. I'm looking at their last seven games because they've won five straight and they've won six of seven. So I'm kind of taking that seven-game stretch. During that time, Bryant is averaging 19.7 points. I mean, that's a big scoring number for him. Over 12 rebounds. He had a season-high 29 versus Sac in that controversial game on Saturday. You talked about Russell Westbrook. Again, last seven games, 15 points, 7.6 rebounds, 9.6 assists. Okay? That's big great numbers for him. The team has seven players averaging double figures. One of them is AD. But it just goes to show you that there are some guys that they can put out there that we really did. We kind of threw dirt on them earlier in the season, but they're definitely alive and kicking. Not so much, though, their fellow tenants, though, at the formerly known as Staples Center.
Yeah, the Clippers are struggling right now and struggling to stay healthy. I mean, I think that's always kind of been their MO with Kawhi Leonard, but now Kawhi's back, Paul George is sitting. Paul George is out, Batum was hurt. Norman Powell's been hurt until recently. They just have not been able to put that whole nucleus together and have them healthy at the same time. And, you know, a concern I have for the team as well is their point guard play. I mean, all, you know, much respect to Reggie Jackson and John Wall. They're, of course, solid NBA point guards, but they're just not consistent guys. Those guys are roller coaster rides, and it goes well with this season. For the Clippers, it's been a roller coaster to say the least.
You know, you mentioned how they've been injuries have hurt them. They've been guys in and out of the lineup, and it's true. But even when they were together, it's not as if this team was championship material. I mean, they've only had George and Leonard on the court together for 11 games at the same time, but they're only 6-5. You know, since Kawhi came back on a regular basis, 18 games. They're only 8-10 since Kawhi returned. So, yeah. I mean, they just haven't gelled at all this year. And if you want to say it's because of injuries or whatever, that's fine. But I'm looking at them. You know what? When Kawhi returned, the day he returned, the Clippers were 28th in offensive efficiency. Now, on a Monday, January 9th, they're 28th in offensive efficiency.
Wow.
I mean, nothing's changed. They're just, they're the same team they've been. They're terrible on offense, and it's going to cost them a real legitimate chance to do damage in the playoffs because they have a really top-notch defense. But they haven't gelled all year, no matter who's together, whether they have guys healthy or not. So I don't see how this is going to change as the season goes on.
They're in their six-game losing streak that they're currently on, which, by the way, is the longest losing streak of the Kawhi PG-13 era since they've got – so they're playing the worst basketball since those two have been with the franchise. They're losing those games by an average of 10.5 points a game. So some of the games have been close. One or two have been not close, and you know, one's maybe, you know, around that 10-point average. They're currently tied for sixth with Golden State. Golden State is tied for sixth. Talk about a team we kind of semi-threw some dirt on. So they're right up. So these teams are all backing up to the Clippers now. Lakers, you know, same deal. They're as we said a few minutes ago, number 11, only a game behind, although they play later this evening, Monday. But the Clippers on Sunday, they had an 11-point lead against Atlanta with under 7 minutes to go. Lost the game at home, okay? Reggie Jackson has just been abysmal. In fact, Ty Lue took him out of the starting lineup for that game. He was replaced by Terrence Mann, who did okay. But Reggie Jackson is averaging just 3 points in his last four games, shooting just 22% from the floor. Now, you know, that's a slump. That's a four-game sample. So he may very, very well bounce back, you know, score sometimes, you know, they'll have those things. But the next two games for the Clippers aren't exactly gimmies. I mean, yes, they're both at home, but they get Dallas, and then they get Denver. So, you know, you would think that it's a very good chance they're going to lose both of those games at home, the way, given the way that they're playing right now.
Yeah, I think just to sum everything up here with the Clippers, their biggest weakness is consistency, whether that be their health, their offensive play, or even their defense. I mean, just to kind of drive home how inconsistent this team has been, I would argue the most consistent player all season has been Zubac. Zubac, their center, has played very consistent for that team. Really doesn't even have a backup five. And he just continues to be the anchor of that defense, grabbing rebounds and, you know, getting stops around the basket. But, you know, if Zubac's your most consistent player when you have the names of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on your team, you're probably not a very good team. So they've got to figure something out in a hurry. But that leads us right into our second quarter here, speaking of names. And, you know, there has been a trend going viral on social media discussing the international starting five versus a domestic starting five. So I thought it'd be fun here if we would go ahead and pencil in and see what World B and Bruce would pencil in as their starters for both teams. And then ultimately, once picking their starters, who would win the game? Bruce, let's start with you and give us your international starting five.
Okay, starting at center, Nikola Jokic, averaging 25, almost 11, 9.5 assists. Unbelievable player. MVP favorite again at this point, I would say. At one of the forwards, I've got the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 32 and almost 12 rebounds. Now, at my other forward, you know, you might expect me to just take Joel Embiid and say front court, front court, front court, but I decided to go with an actual forward for my other position. So I'm taking Pascal Siakam of Toronto, the only guy who's doing anything for that team this year, averaging nearly 26. My backcourt is, you know, no-brainer, Luka Doncic, 34, almost nine boards, almost nine assists. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I would say is probably the most improved player in the league this year, averaging just under 31, almost five boards, a little over five assists. And my sixth man, because I wanted to put Embiid on the team, so I'm making him my sixth man, second leading scorer in the NBA, often injured as he is right now. So that is my international lineup. Michael, what do you, who do you have?
Basically, you know, it's hard not to have around the same players. I was inspired by Marist College from the 80s when Rick Smith was there, and they had a starting front line of 7'4", 7 foot, and 6'11".
Okay.
So that being said, I went with the, I went big on my lineup for the international team. I have Giannis, the Joker, and Embiid as my front. My front line. Let's see somebody try and get a basket in there, and you better make it because you're not getting the offensive glass. And then at the two guards, I put Luka and SGA. I know they're both basically point guard, but I'll play one off the ball. I'm sure I'll be just fine. And Siakam, I have as my bench guy. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. He's just a steady, great player, and he's having another all-star caliber year.
So, Russ, tell us about that team. What do you think? What's that team's strengths? What makes them an amazing unit to watch play?
I mean, first of all, the length on both of your teams. I mean, whether we start Giannis at the three or Siakam comes off the bench as a versatile 3-4 for either of your units. I think the defensive length is great defensively. SGA has that length defensively with the guards as well. But really, obviously, I'm going to focus on the offense of the international team. And what I think this group really would buy into is team play. I mean, these guys are not going to do a ton of isolations. It's going to be great ball movement. And who's that ball movement going to go through? No matter how much talent you have, it's going to go through Luka and the Joker. And a lot of that would be fully focused on the Joker there, just picking apart the domestic starting lineup. And, you know, they've got the IQ of SGA, Giannis, Siakam, and even Embiid, if he, you know, a little high-low action. I think the Joker would be great, you know, being a quarterback of that offense, and that would be a tough team to beat. So I'm very interested, Bruce, to hear who you guys have as your domestic starting five.
All right. I'm going to take Bam Adebayo for my center. Bam is averaging 21, almost 10 boards, 3.1 assists. And he's a guy, I'm not saying he's like Joker, but he's a guy that you can run a lot of your offense through. He moves the ball well. He's a good passer. He's not Nikola Jokic, but he's a really nice energy guy. And he's got a great motor. I always enjoy watching him play. At one forward, I mean, look, LeBron James, I said it all before, nothing left to add, the GOAT. The other forward, I'm going to take Jason Tatum because I'm a Boston homer and I just can't help myself. Also, to me, you know, he's right there among the scoring leaders, getting rebounds, dishing, playing great defense. In the backcourt, although he's injured right now, he will be back eventually. I'm going to take Stephen Curry. Greatest shooter in the history of mankind, averaging 30, leading the league with 5 made threes per game. At the other guard, I'm going to go with Spida, Donovan Mitchell, Mr. 71-point performance last week, helping take, you know, Cleveland to a higher level this year. We expected them to be better, but he's made them borderline elite. And my sixth man, again, is on the injury list right now, but that's Kevin Durant. Almost 30 a game, has played incredible D and has led Brooklyn to the second best record in the entire league. Hopefully, you know, he'll be back healthy reasonably soon, Mike.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, how amazing is it to have a guy like KD, who is a serious MVP candidate, coming off both our benches, as it turns out, because my lineup, this was a little tougher to choose from. We have a couple of different players in our starting lineup. My guy in the middle is Anthony Davis. By the way, this is all under the assumption that everybody's healthy. So we don't, you know, worry about injuries in this scenario. AD, before he got hurt, was an MVP candidate. He was the MVP candidate for the first month of the season. He was playing that well. So I think I'll leave him in there. My backcourt is Steph and Devin Booker. I think Booker's value to the Suns has been pretty apparent since he's been injured, and the way they're playing right now is really, they're really struggling offensively, and not having him on the court is a big reason why. The front court is LeBron and Tatum. I've always said in to talk about LeBron the way Bruce did before, I always put LeBron in this category of he's the only player I've ever seen where you could put at any position, center, forward, any of the five positions, and he could play at an all-star level, not get voted into the all-star. He could be an all-star at center. If you want him, if you came the year and say, listen, off-season, play, work on being a center, he could be an all-star center. He's that good of a player. And Tatum is another first-team all-NBA type player this year. And KD is coming off the bench. I mean, what better way to match the length of the international team than to bring in a 6'11 guy to stretch you and make you guard him out on the three?
Yeah, I like that you guys both picked KD to be your sixth man, as you alluded to there, with their length. I mean, you're going to need length to match up against those international stars. And what I really like about this domestic team is defensively, you're going to be able to switch everything. I mean, Bam Adebayo can guard pretty much every position. He's great in pick and rolls against guards. LeBron, Tatum speak for themselves defensively. Mitchell's great. I like the Donovan Mitchell pick there, Bruce, because he can match the physicality of Luka Doncic, who loves to be physical on his drives. I think Donovan's got the strength and muscle to offer up some resistance there. And the one thing with the domestic team defensively that really stands out, and I'm sure you've heard it before, Steph Curry, I feel like he's going to get picked on. There's going to be some post-up plays for the point guards on the international team. But on the other end, I mean, Curry's the best shooter in the world, best shooter of all time, in my opinion. He's going to cause a ton of trouble for that international team. It's more so like it is every year for Team USA, I think. You know, getting these guys to gel and to buy into team play. I think, as we know, international guys are, you know, certainly, you know, come into the league with a European style that's more team oriented, and domestically, you know, we play AAU ball a lot of the time. So it'd be very curious to see, you know, if they got like a week to have a training camp, if this domestic unit could put it all together and defeat that international squad. But boy, would that be a hell of a game.
I think the fact that these guys have all been played on the national team would probably help that out. I think they, you know, their time spent on the Olympic team, I think, would help that out, I think. Plus, you got a lot of unselfish guys there. You know, LeBron is. Steph, for all his shots or whatever, is still a 7-assist guy. So I think there's enough unselfishness and team-oriented guys on there to make it work.
So who wins the game, guys?
I'm going to go with the international squad. I think it's just too much talent with the Joker. I trust the ball in his hands. I trust that team more than I do the domestic team to play team basketball and pick apart Curry and other weaknesses that they find throughout the game. I think they're true fuel of the game and just ability to kind of dominate in the paint. I mean, when you're talking about the Joker and Giannis, those are two of the best in the game down in the low post, especially Giannis. And you got a cold-blooded game on the line shooter like Luka if you need a step back from deep. But World B, who do you got?
Oh, I'd take the U.S. team. I'd stretch everybody out along the three-point line. I got five guys who can shoot the three, or at least attempt the three. You know, AD's life got a lot better this year when he stopped taking threes. So, but I can put in KD in place of AD, and now I can stretch you all out. Now you got to guard me out on the three, and then I can take you to the hole. And then, you know, let's see. The length would be a problem in the middle. If we try to get to the basket, there'd be somebody there from the international squad ready to send that ball flying back. But I'll take my chances and let Steph and Booker and Tatum take a bunch of threes and KD off the bench. I think we'll score enough to come away with the win.
Okay, so I get to break the tie then, right?
Yeah.
I've got the international squad. You know, Jokic speaks for himself, makes every player on the court better, and you've got so much talent on that court already. To actually have somebody that's as good and can make all of those guys better, to me, is almost scary to think about. Giannis, you know, great defender in the paint, great scorer, great rebounder. Siakam gives you a little bit of everything. Luka Doncic, again, between him and Joker, the ball movement on that team is just going to be ridiculous, and they will wear any team out because they're going to keep that ball moving. They're going to make the defense go side-to-side guarding. They're going to make them use a lot of energy, and that style has proven to be very successful. And then, you know, you've got a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who can – he's almost like Nikola Jokic in this one respect. You can speed him up. He goes – he plays the game at his pace. Doesn't matter what kind of defense he's going against. As Greg Anthony said to me one time about Chris Paul, he get what gotta get got. He just finds a way. He get what gotta get got. And that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and then you got Joel Embiid. So to me, it might go to overtime, but I got the international team winning this one.
You know, one factor we didn't consider, are we playing? I'm under the assumption we're playing under NBA rules, but wouldn't it be fun if we played international rules and you could swipe the ball off the rim?
big advantage for the international team, in my opinion.
Yeah. For everybody out there, by the way, take the over.
Yeah. Well put there, will be. Well, that would be one heck of a game. And for the third quarter, fellas, I also wanted to play a game. We're going to call the segment Too Cool for School. And what I'm going to be doing is testing Bruce and World B's knowledge on certain NBA players and where they played their college ball. And so, do you know where they went to school and played ball? Or are you, in fact, too cool for school? So,
or too stupid for 48 minutes, one or the other.
So I'm going to be nice. I've got five players here. I'll start with player number one, and I'm going to start you off with a nice soft toss with Blazer star, former lottery pick, Damian Lillard.
Damian Lillard went to Weber State.
Yes, he did.
That is correct, yep, in the Big Sky Conference. So we're one for one here on the show.
So wait, next. Are we getting individual questions? Because, you know,
I think it's going to be
assuming I'm going to get it wrong, and Mike's going to have to clean up my mess, right?
The first,
I assume it's going to be the other way, but that's
so the first to answer wins. So we'll give Bruce one. First one to blurt it out wins. So all right, this next guy is due back very soon, and will be a much needed return to the Pelicans. Larry Nance, where did he go to school?
Tick, 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 tick. I don't even know where his father went to school.
Larry Nance went to Wyoming.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes,
of course he did.
All right. Well, if you can't get that one, these next three might be interesting, but hopefully our listeners are answering along with us here. This is a fan favorite that lost all his shine when the Kings decided to do the Tyrese Haliburton trade. Where did Sean Holmes go to school?
Oh, God. I have no idea.
Give you a hint. It's in Ohio.
Miami?
Incorrect. Bowling Green.
You didn't get a chance to say Bowling Green.
I'm just glad I knew Bowling Green was in Ohio.
All right, moving right along here. Currently leads the NBA in three-point field goal percentage. Yuta the Shooter of the Brooklyn Nets. Where did he go to school?
Washington?
That's correct. George Washington.
I meant the University of Washington, but I'll tell
you. Oh, I'll give you half credit there. I gave you more credit than you deserve. But
I deserve no credit.
All right. Well,
I know it's in D.C. Do I get anything for that part?
No.
Yeah, no. Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. That's a dead giveaway with the school name.
Darn it.
All right. Last but not least, World B, you need one for the tie here. Okay. Fresh off an impressive 26.8 rebound night versus World B's Orlando Magic. Anthony Lamb of the Golden State Warriors. Where did he go to school?
Haven't a clue. I don't know.
No, I'm thinking of Jeremy Lamb went to UConn. It's not it. No. Anthony Lamb didn't go to UConn. I have no idea.
Anthony Lamb went to Vermont. So hopefully you guys learned something there along with our listeners if they didn't get those trivia questions right. But next time, I guess I'll make it a little easier. But at least we got one in Weber State, and we all learned something, right?
I know the nickname for the Vermont team. Do I get like a tenth of a point for that?
What is it? I don't know that.
The Catamounts.
Catamounts.
Okay. Nice. So, yeah. Props there.
Yeah, well, whatever. Okay.
All right, moving right along.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you can only go to University of Vermont, I thought, unless if your name is Ben and Jerry. If you don't, you're not allowed to go there.
That was cold.
Yeah. I get a quarter of a point for trying to be funny there.
Yeah.
Good
effort. All right, moving right along. Back to the serious talk here for our fourth and final quarter. Let's get into our midseason awards. Bruce, I'll let you start us off here. Who are some guys as we reach the midway point into the season? Are you eyeing for the midseason awards?
Do you want me to just kind of go down my list of five? Okay.
Yeah.
For MVP, I got to give it to the Joker. There's just, you know, his team is right on top of the conference, the Western Conference, right up there among the best records, does it all. Here's a fun fact about him. He's number three in the league in assists. We've talked about that repeatedly. Of the top 10 assist leaders, nine of them are point guards, and then there's Jokic. Boom. You know, that's pretty impressive. Nuggets tied for the top seed in the West with Memphis, third best record in the NBA. Gotta give him the three-peat. Coach of the Year is a very tough call. Between Boston's Joe Mazzulla, Brooklyn's Jacques Vaughn, and Willie Green of New Orleans. But my vote goes to Mazzulla, and it's not just because I'm a homer. Celtics are 28-12, best in the NBA, best road record. He replaced Ime Udoka on the eve of the season, and the team hasn't missed a beat. They lead the league in scoring differential and points per game. So I'm saying, Coach Mazzulla, you're my guy. Rookie of the Year is Michael Freer's favorite young player, Paolo Banchero. 21.4, nearly seven rebounds, nearly four assists. Old man strong, doesn't look like a rookie out there. Looks like a guy who's been out there and against this competition forever. Very mature individual. My number two is Benedict Mathurin, also known as Mathurin. 17 points a game, 64 three-point field goals, third among rookies. My most improved player, I'm giving to SGA. Just under 31 a game, number four in the NBA. My number two most improved player is going to go to Tyrese Halliburton, leading the league in assists. And my number three most improved player, I got to give it to Lauri Markkanen, who's averaging over 24 a game, eight-plus rebounds, and shooting 53% from the floor. So we can do our all-NBA teams maybe after Mike does his, guys. Does that go? Is that cool?
Yep. Yep, right. We'll be.
Well, there's not a tremendous amount of drama here because we have a lot of the same winners here. MVP was the toughest one for me. We've talked about that before. There's really about six legitimate candidates. I think you could make a legitimate case for. I went with the Joker, just slightly over Luka, and the only reason is, you know, his numbers alone, he's averaging almost a triple double. There's a good chance he could end up with a triple-double, you know, averaging for the year. He's shooting as good as he ever has. His effective field goal percentage is 64%, which is a career high pace. But the difference when he is on the court, I've mentioned this before, when he is on the court and when he's off the court, the difference in the Denver offense is unbelievable. They are barely averaging over a point per possession when he is off the court. When he's on the court, it's like 120 points per 100 possessions. It's incredible. That shows you the value to his team. And so I went with Joker. It's like that. If somebody says Luka, somebody says KD, I'm not going to sit here and say you're wrong. Coach of the Year, Bruce said he didn't choose Joe Mazzulla because he chose him not because of the homer. Well, I'm taking Joe Mazzulla because I am a homer. He's a Mountaineer, so I'm taking Joe Mazzulla. I'll bypass all the fact that he's a Celtic, but for everything that that Bruce mentioned, taking over a team on the eve of the season in that fashion, relatively inexperienced as a head coach or as coaching experience, and he comes in there and leads the team, the best record in the league, the best offense in the league. They're clicking. You know, at this point, you'd be the favorites to win the title. So, you know, how can he not? Jacques Vaughn at Brooklyn should get some serious thought, too, as the season goes on, the way things are developing. He could absolutely earn that award. My rookie of the year, it's really not. It's going to be a no-brainer. It's Banchero. He's unbelievable. You know, when he scores 20 or more, he's done it 24 times this year, Orlando's not a bad, they're 11-13, just under 500 when he scores 20 or more. So he's going to be a 30-point-a-game night down the road, I think. So it's really a no-brainer. He's been everything you want to have a number one pick. My most improved, I'm sticking in Orlando. I'm going with Bol Bol. I think he's I don't know how much of serious consideration he'll get by the end of the year, but he really should. His first three seasons, he only averaged about 6 minutes a night and less than 3 points a game. Now he's getting about 26 minutes a night, 12 points a game, 7 boards, over 1.5 blocks a game, and just over 26 minutes a game. He's really stepped. He's a shooting 39% from 3-point range, along with shooting, I think, 59% from the field. He's really been one of the keys for them when they do well. He's out right now in the health and safety protocols, but he's having a really good year, a really surprising year for the Magic. And we'll get to the All-NBA team here in a minute.
Yeah, and I'll quickly go through my list here. My MVP, I'm going to go with Giannis. I know that's obviously a homer pick for me, but I'm going to stay optimistic here that Chris Middleton will get back at some point. If Chris Middleton does not get back at some point, and Giannis is able to continue to have the Bucks where they are in the standings for an 82-game season, I think that's going to very well warrant another MVP consideration. I think voter fatigue is real in the NBA. I hate to bring that up as a talking point, but I don't know if the Joker is going to get 3 in a row. Same reason, other guys in the past that arguably could have had number 3 did not get it. Rookie of the Year, Paolo. No need to go ahead and exhaust any more on him. My most improved player is Bruce's number 2, Tyrese Haliburton. Ja Morant won it a few years ago, so that would certainly put SGA in that consideration as well as being a very dominant point guard. But I think what Tyrese Haliburton has done, as we mentioned on our last pod, having his team a top 6 team in the East with that roster and leading the league in assists would be well warranted. And then another guy Bruce mentioned that I had as my coach of the year, Willie Green. I think Willie Green's done an exceptional job down in New Orleans. They have had so many injuries from CJ McCollum being out, Brandon Ingram being out for most of the year, and now Zion's out. And just what he's been able to continue to do with that team and some of the development stories within the team, Jose Alvarado, Trey Murphy III. You go down the list, Najee Marshall. They've got a ton of guys that are playing the best basketball of their careers, and I think that has a lot to do with the position Willie Green is putting them in to succeed. But with that, Bruce, we'll get to our All-NBA team.
All right, so unlike when I picked my top squad before, this time you can do 3 front court guys and 2 guards. So that's the way I'm going. And I didn't realize it when I picked this team, but in looking at it now, my All-NBA first team are all international players. I've got Jokic, I've got Embiid, I've got Giannis, I've got Luka, and I've got SGA. That's my first team. And I feel, and I didn't even consciously say, oh, do I need, I mean, it was just to me, amazing that that's probably the first time I've ever felt that way. Second team, if anyone cares, same deal, 3 front court guys, LeBron, KD, Tatum, backcourt, Ja Morant, and Donovan Mitchell. Michael?
My first team, I went with Luka and the Joker and Giannis, and I went LeBron and Jason Tatum. I think they're LeBron in year 20, we just mentioned at the top of the show. The numbers are incredible. He's going to be a 30 point a game night and a player, points per game. And, Tatum is the best player on the best team. He's elevated his game. It's unbelievable to leave a guy like KD off, but, he can only have 5. So he just barely, they tip off the ball and he's already subbing in. That's how close it is. It's an incredible season for offensive individual performances. We talked that last week. This is just a perfect example of how crazy it is. A guy like KD's and Donovan Mitchell is not on anybody's first team.
All right. And lastly, I've got my two guards being SGA and Luka. While I didn't give the flowers to SGA for most improved player, I do have him as a first teamer guard this year in the NBA. Alongside him, I've got Luka Doncic. I think that man speaks for himself, what he's doing in Dallas single-handedly this season, putting up historic numbers, historic nights. I've got the Joker because he arguably could become a three-time MVP, and I would not have an argument why he shouldn't. Jason Tatum, best player on the best team in the NBA and the Boston Celtics, certainly belongs in that conversation. And then I got to give it up to the 38-year-old LeBron James, putting together one of his better seasons. Certainly impressed with just where he's got this Lakers group playing now as they're on the rise, as I mentioned earlier. And seems like we're all kind of clicking on the same wavelength here with all NBA team, but it's truly hard to argue the names that we threw out there.
Hey, looks like we're going to do some free basketball tonight, right? We're in overtime now. Highly unusual for us. So I can't think of a better way to kick off overtime than for Russ to help people out to make some money.
Yeah, let's get right into that. And tonight's best bets discussion, or should I say hot take opportunity, is to go ahead and focus in on the homecoming game for Donovan Mitchell. The Cavaliers tomorrow night on Tuesday face off back in Utah against the Jazz. And I'm looking at the two top players on both teams. I'm looking at Lauri Markkanen. Of course, he used to play for Cleveland, was traded in the deal for Donovan Mitchell. And I'm going to take the over. I would take the over on Lauri Markkanen scoring 25.5 points, so 26 for the game tomorrow night at home versus the Cavs. He scored 24 points in their last meeting. And just this past Saturday, Lauri put together 28 points against his other former team, the Chicago Bulls. So I think he keeps the hot streak going on a revenge and goes ahead and goes for 26 plus. And then I wanted to roll this one out for you guys, World B and Bruce. Back at home, Donovan Mitchell, where he had his long career up until this time. His line right now is 27.5 points. You guys taking the over or under on Mitchell scoring 28?
I mean, 28 is an off night for him these days. So I would say I would probably take the over. And by the way, on Markkanen, I would take the under going up against Mobley and Jared Allen. I think it's going to be tough for him. I'm going with the under. I'm disagreeing with my guru over here. And I'm totally taking fine. The over. I'm taking the over on Spida.
I would take the over on Donovan Mitchell. I think he scored 28 or more in 22 of his 36 games he's played this year. So, plus he's got that, you know, silly 71 point game that, you know, if he's half as good, he's got the over.
All right. Well, there you have it. Everyone kind of threw in their best bets for that fun matchup tomorrow night on Tuesday. Fellas, we have any other final thoughts here before we wind down the show?
I do, teacher. I do. my closing thought is kind of a quirky Oklahoma City Thunder thing. They have two guys on their roster with the same name. They have Jalen Williams, 6'6 rookie guard, averaging 11.5 points on 51% shooting. And they've got Jalen Williams, a 6'9 rookie forward, averaging 3 points. They spell their first names a bit differently. There's Jalen, he's the one averaging 11, and Jaylin is the forward. They also have another Williams on their roster, Kenrich, and I believe have a Wiggins too. So the W's have it if you want to buy a vowel or a consonant or something. I don't know, Mike.
My closing thought is we've talked about throughout this show and these episodes about how great the offense has been this year. And it really have. We, you know, can go up and down again about how wonderful, you know, some of these performances have been. The second half of the year, I want to see the team that can really step up defensively and really make a name for themselves. We know everybody can score. We've seen it. Everybody has the capability of scoring. I want to find a team that is going to be – can the Celtics match defense, continue to match what their offense has done? Can the Brooklyn Nets find a defense to go along with the offense that they have. Can Cleveland maintain their defense? Can they win a championship just off their defense, even though they do have a very good offense? That's the team that I want to see. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks have a great defense. Is it enough to overcome a lousy offense? And same thing with the Clippers. You know, these are the teams. If you can set us up, you can play really good defense our second half of the year, and you got a chance to win a championship.
All right. And my closing thoughts here is on a game here tonight, late on the East Coast time zone, but Magic at Kings. I'm looking really looking forward to seeing this Magic team, how they respond after a big win in Golden State the other night. I think they match up well against Sacramento, especially down low. I'm not sure who's going to guard Paolo Banchero and Wendell Carter Jr. I mean, between the two of them, Sabonis can only handle one. So I'm a little nervous for the Kings as they've lost their last two games at home. And tonight's going to be another scary test. They have a chance to maybe lose three straight home games with the young but talented Orlando Magic coming into town. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one, and maybe we'll go ahead and discuss that next episode. But want to thank everyone for tuning in to this edition, episode 8 of 48 Minutes on Believe. We'll be back with you on Friday, and we'll see you then. Take care, and be sure to subscribe.